Hi, I'm Angela Artolino, and welcome to Your Natural Dog, my podcast featuring in-depth conversation with the world's leading holistic veterinarians and pet care pros. Join us every week as we reveal natural alternatives to the outdated one-size-fits-all pet care model we're used to. If you like what you hear, please make sure to leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. The only way we can get our message out to pet parents all over the world is with your support. Stop barking! I'm trying to record a podcast!
Hey folks, and welcome to this episode of Your Natural Dog with Angela Artolino. In this conversation, we have an incredible guest. Her name is Lisa Tully, and we are going to be talking about end-of-life care for our pets. Lisa Tully, she is an herbalist and an animal communicator and really specializes in this transitional period in our lives and that of our pets. And in this really insightful conversation, allows us to understand better how we can prepare ourselves and how we can prepare our animals and the ways that we can learn from each other and have this really be a dynamic time and one that is treated with sensitivity, but one that really honors this process that is a natural part of every animal, every living being's life cycle. We're also going to hear a lot from Angela about her experience, you know, working on her rescue farm and all the animals that she helped cross over. And so this is this episode's a little bit of a tearjerker, but is full of so much insight and really valuable lessons about how to deal with this thing that everybody seems to go through. So please enjoy this really phenomenal conversation with Lisa Tully and Angela Artolino.
And we're back with Lisa Tully. I'm so excited to have you on today, but I know, actually, I should run go get a box of tissues because I know we're going to cry. Yeah, I know my listeners know, and it's funny because it's been so hard to talk about losing my soul dog, Odie. I can't even talk about it. It's literally been a year. And I still can't talk about it. And it was the first time that it hit me, losing an animal like this hit me so hard. And I mean, harder than losing a relative. And it really made me think, like, what is it about this little creature, you know, that made such an impact in my life? And as many people who lose their beloved pets realize, it's the unconditional love they give you. You know, it was the first, you know, time that I really felt complete and unconditional love from something else. And I think that that's why they're so important. It's literally why I do what I do in my life, because they need us. But I know a lot of other people who feel this way. And I can't imagine, you know, losing Odie during a low point in my life, like that would have been really hard. And I know there's a lot of people out there that lose their pets when they are in a low point in their life. And I can't even imagine coming up out of that hole. So I thought it really was important to have someone like you on so that we could talk about it. It's almost like I literally prepared for Odie's death at 8 weeks old, because I was like, oh my God, I've never loved, I lost my dog. I took, you know, years to get another one, got another one, thought I could never love something more than I loved my Lucy. And oh my God, then Odie came along. And I literally was like, oh my gosh, he's going to leave me one day. So I literally was preparing for his death from the beginning, going, Angie, one day he's going to die. Angie, one day he's going to die. You got to be okay with that. So that's what we're literally talking about today. Is that they are going to leave us. And at the end, it is really difficult. And it's, you know, one of the biggest reasons I created my products is I never want to see an animal suffer. And I literally put something in a bottle that any pet parent could have that could take away that suffering or pain or anxiety. So that's what I did about it. But you're an expert in this. You were literally an animal healer. And I just want to talk about it. I know you just lost your dog last year also, your soul dog. What should we tell our pet parents? Like, how should we prepare? I know I overdid it by preparing from birth. But what are like some things that pet parents can do? They've got an old dog, and what can they do when it starts coming to the end that we have to make that hard decision?
Yeah, first of all, I'm sorry to hear about your OD. It's just always so difficult, isn't it, when they leave their bodies and go beyond the veil. And it's a really sensitive time, and I'm actually going through it at the moment with a client, so it's perfect timing for this conversation. How I'm literally helping her is her dog is in that end of life stage where she's still with us. She's got dementia, so the dementia is building. Her bones and her muscles, she's lost a lot of structure there, so it's very painful in her body. So she's under the care of my colleague, who's a Chinese medicine vet, and then myself as well. And we've come to that point now where we're having the conversation of what's the balance? What's the balance between too much suffering and then also giving the animal a choice? So to prepare her person, I've been working with this dog over 6 months, and it's been incredible because we've been doing communications with the dog, you know, whenever it's been needed. And the dog created flower essence mixes. So I do a bit of zoopharmacognosy where they self-select their own botanicals, but I've taken it to another level where they self-select botanicals for their people. Right. So I do that throughout my work. Yeah. So they usually do flower essences. So this dog started creating flower essence mixes for his dog mom, you know, like several months ago. And she was at a point in her grief where she couldn't function. But the dog was actually okay. But it was like that anticipatory grief. So the dog's like, okay, we need to help her. So we created flower essence mixes for her and her partner. And it was almost like she got a chance to grieve in advance. So she became much more empowered within the situation. And then the dog was doing well. And now the dog has kind of hit a natural roadblock now where we really need to consider it. So what I do is I assist the dog and I say, where are you at? You know, are you suffering too much now that you need assistance to leave your body? Or do you want to go on your own? Do you still want to kind of hang out? And we use, under the guidance of homeopathic vets, I use Arsenicum 10M, which is a homeopathic, we classify it as the bridge because it opens up the bridge between the earth and the heavens. And it can allow the animal to release their soul when they're ready. So it's loosely termed homeopathic euthanasia, but you probably get into trouble for saying that. but it's true. That's what it does. So this dog has been working with this under the guidance of the vet, working with this remedy. So she's been getting ready, right? And it's like she's been making herself ready and she's been making her person ready. So it's been a really contained journey. And now we're at the point where I did another check-in with the dog yesterday and I said, where are you at? You know, you had a rough, rough weekend. And our person's like, you know, what does she want? And do you know what the dog said? The dog said, okay, I'm not going anywhere because I still have something to teach her. I still want to teach her to feel more in control in this situation. It's a very heartfelt situation, but the stress levels are escalating. And I want to give her my parting gift, which is to teach her to feel more stronger. So tell her she has to now start planning. If I need a vet, who's going to be the vet? Where's it going to be? How's it going to happen? Am I going to be cremated or am I going to be buried? I don't mind which, she has to choose, right? So then when I spoke to the person after that, she just goes, I can't believe you're saying that. She goes, we were just talking about that yesterday on the beach. You know, we just have to put a plan in place. So the dog is literally empowering her. And I don't know how it's going to go. I'm there on the end of the phone. If she gets really bad, they're like, Lisa, check in with her. Is she ready now? Does she want euthanasia? Or she might go on her own just with the remedies and the botanicals. So in answer to your question, Angela, it's really, each case is different and I track it and I see what way each animal's going to go. And some of them go in, you know yourself, a variety of ways. But if you have the privilege that I feel this guardian has, where it's almost like you can plan for it, it's not that shock, you know, it's not that trauma where the animal's been in ICU, you haven't seen them and they're gone. I mean, that's just the worst.
It is.
Yes, the worst. Like that's happened to me. And whereas this peaceful, conscious awareness where the animal is in charge. And if the animal does go for euthanasia and they choose chemical euthanasia, because they've done it through me as an animal communicator, it takes away the natural guilt that comes after euthanasia. You know, the grief guilt, coulda, woulda, shoulda, was it the right time? And that's natural. That's part of it. But it just releases that. So at least that bit is not on your shoulders. You're just coping with just pure raw grief then, which is what it is, you know?
If you're like us, your pets are part of the family. That's why at CBD Dog Health, we created a line of human-grade, full-spectrum hemp products tailored specifically to your furry friend's needs. Whether they're suffering from fear of fireworks, arthritis from old age, or even seizures and cancer, research shows that a high-quality CBD oil can make a big difference for them. Enter coupon code RADIO at cbddoghealth.com for 15% off your first order. That's RADIO. CBD Dog Health, healing naturally.
I ran a dog rescue I rescue farm animals and dogs for a long time. And so I've had lots of, you know, dogs pass on me. I actually, you know, because they were old, they were really old. I would adopt old, sick dogs and then try to bring them back to homeostasis with food, cannabis and fungi and some adaptogens. And I often did it and often lost, I'll never forget learning how a dog dies from dementia, mm-hmm. you know, never knowing that they literally forget, don't know how to eat and drink. So knowing, you know, seeing that and witnessing that and knowing that we can do something about that and assist them with that is a beautiful thing. It wasn't until every dog told me when it was time to go, except for Odie. Odie okay. would not let go. And that's made it even harder. So it was like, and again, he was trying to teach me a lesson, whatever he's communicated with me since. And that's the first time that that's ever happened to me also. Well, that I paid attention and knew that's what it was.
Yeah.
But that was really, he did not want to go. And he was, you know, a whole week with basically being, you know, so intoxicated because he was having neurological symptoms that the only way that I could calm his neurological system was to either give him a lot of cannabis or a lot of adaptogens to settle down the neurological activity. He did not want to go. Mm. and it had to, he was suffering. So it was yeah. like, I never could figure it out, but every other dog told me, it never was a question. They always told me, you know, when they stopped drinking or stopped eating and it wasn't dementia and they didn't want to get up. They've always, always told me, except for Odie. So I think it is really important to have a plan. I think that that you only have that bad experience once where you have to go to the vet and they go into the back and you don't see them and then they're gone. That will never happen to me again.
Yeah.
And I know in Florida, I don't know if this is everywhere, but in Florida, I could have a beautiful service called Lap of Love come to the house. And they were just it was the most beautiful experience. You know, they knew me by first name because they had to come to my house a lot. And that to me was just a beautiful thing to know that you have this beautiful, wonderful person that's going to come help you take care mm-hmm. of it. And you don't think of things of, when you have a big dog, you got to do something with that big dog's body afterwards. And how do you want to honor it? And what do you want to do? So what is the plan? What is the plan that pet parents should basically have in place way beforehand? Because when you're in it, it's really hard to think straight because you're so emotional about it. So what is the plan? What is a good plan that pet parents should put together now before it happens?
First of all, I would start with the intention before you get into the practicalities. So what I learned was when I had that horrific experience where my animal passed away after a lot of ICU care versus the experience of an animal passing away naturally at home, it's night and day.
It is.
So yeah. So after the first horrific experience, I just said to myself, okay, for my next fluff, I said, I am not ever going through that again. It's going to be peaceful. And it was just, it was like a switch went on and I refused that switch to go off. My Same. Intention was, yeah, it was going to be easy for him. It was going to be easy for me. And that's just it. Okay. So I really encourage my clients to try learn from, you know, not have to go to what I went to and learn how to switch on that switch within their own awareness and their own intentions. So that would be number one. But then if you have the privilege of knowing in advance if your animal is coming towards the end of life where you can take action, the next thing that I would do is I would contact someone like myself who is an animal communicator that can start to have a conversation with the animal and say, well, what do you want? Like, what would you like now? What would your intention be? And sometimes they'll say, yeah, I want to try, when the time comes, I want to try go naturally. Or I'd like assistance with some of these end of life botanicals that you have. So the conversation is open and all the responsibility is not resting on the shoulders of the actual guardian themselves. And then the next thing I think is really important in your plan is to have a compassionate vet. Okay, so when you're working with end of life and you're like, is it now, is it not? You don't want them to suffer too much, but you want to make sure they're, you know, all this kind of stuff. So when you work with like the holistic vets that I work with, I can totally trust them, or even just a vet, you know, like that you've been working with for years and has a good relationship and a good heart. Just someone that can check in to see, is this it? Is the animal now suffering beyond too much? Or is this just a flare up and it's going to, you know, so having that is priceless. You know, that medical support. And then I feel also the next steps as well is to start to work with end of life botanicals in the sense that they ready you and they ready the animal. They're not going to make anything happen. But like what I did with my client, there's those essences, for example, that you can use to just allow you to accept it as something that's inevitably going to happen. And it keeps you in your body. And then also there's essences then that you could work with the animal to give them a bit of a space from you. And that, like, cause our grief and our suffering, it's spilling over into their energy body. It's spilling over to the hearts and minds. And they're way better at passing than we are. They're far more grounded in it. So it, you know, we can help the animal just kind of have this little cocoon of love, cocoon of energy. You're dealing with your stuff. You've got your essences. They're dealing, you know, they're working to their stuff. And also what I would put into plan as well is the rest of the animals in the family. Okay. If there's other animals around, it's having just speaking to them. They understand when we talk to them, just like when you do a person. And just preparing them, and maybe they need some essences, maybe they need some grief essences, maybe they have different suggestions of what can happen. And then what I always suggest to my clients then is, like I said, you choose your vet. If they are going to need chemical assistance, where is it going to be? Who's going to be there? And don't let people tell you what to do. You do what feels right for you and what feels right for the animal. And also to make sure that it's practically set up and have a conversation with the vet beforehand. I'll give you an example of what I think can go wrong is one of my clients, she's very, very conscious about the whole experience. And it was when her horse was just not really able to stand, you know, horses will go down. So I said, okay, get the vet. And it was the one part of the jigsaw piece that we probably didn't go into deeper enough because it was a rural setting. You're going to be limited what vets are going to be able to go out into the middle of a field on a Tuesday afternoon, right? You are. And the horse then kind of was moving away from the vet and it had the halter on and it didn't flow so well.
So meaning it was a vet she didn't know and yeah. Like got it. Yeah.
Do you know? So just be aware of that as well. Now, the other thing that I want people to be aware of is also another thing that has kind of thrown people a little bit as well is we've done the whole conscious setup. Everything's ready. The vet's there. Sometimes when the vets put the needle in for the euthanasia, it hurts the animal. Okay. So if I've, you know, prepared everybody, prepared the animal, this is the time, then suddenly the needle can hurt the animal. The animal might look at their person and that can easily be translated as I got it wrong. It's the wrong time. right? So one of my holistic vet friends, what she does, which I think is very beautiful, if all the family are coming in, if they're in the clinic and they're coming in for the to say goodbye, she'll take the dog or the cat, she's a small animal vet, she'll take them out into the back room and she'll put the catheter in. Okay, so to avoid that, you know, that ow, so it's in. Okay. And then she brings the animal back in and she has the drip. Okay. So she's over the other side of the room and all the family are around the animal and she's just releasing the drip. And the it goes in, you know, the, whatever one she's using. And it just becomes, it just removes that shock when the needle actually goes in as well.
The lap of love people that I used all the time actually would do a sedative beforehand they would do it. Because, that makes it a huge difference.
It does. It does.
Yeah. Everybody's nice and calm and it makes a big difference because I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a deep conversation, isn't it?
But, it is.
And
it's intentional and it makes a difference. I also when I knew I decided my preparation was to, when I found Lap of Love, I thought it was an amazing organization and it is veterinarians that come, you know, they're like on call. So this is, we've got a call. Do you want to go do this? And they, all of them are the most beautiful, compassionate, wonderful veterinarians. So I didn't have to have that scare every time it was a different veterinarian that came and they were all the same. They were all just the most beautiful, spiritual, you know, wonderful, caring beings. So we're lucky. If you guys have that type of service in your, look them up, Lap of Love or something like it, they're great. If not, you got Lisa that you can call that can help you. You know, I had an offer of so many communicators to talk to him during, you know, his last couple of months, but I felt like I was communicating with him. What I got most is that he didn't want to go, but there wasn't anything I could do about, you know, his 16 and a half year old little body, you know, giving up on him kind of thing.
This is a question that I've had a lot. And maybe Lisa, you can help me understand this, is not all of us have the gift of, you know, animal communication, but I imagine that there's some place in between, you know, having somebody else be present to do this and just opening yourself up to be able to experience this phase of your pet's life and just listening a little bit more intently with your animal. How do you instruct pet parents that are in this phase to be able to kind of like open the door to this potential to, you know, help them move on as well as be open to what they have to teach you? How do you talk to people about this kind of esoteric idea?
Yeah. So, well, actually what I do is I just let the animals talk to them and it's very simple. All I do is I've got a library of meditations that I've created, guided meditations, where I open up a bit of a portal through the meditations and it's literally setting up the situation where the person's mind and heart and soul is calm enough to then I say, now imagine your animals in front of you now. What do you think they would say? Or is there any messages they have for you? And you'd be very surprised how clear it comes through. So it's about trying to help people get to that place. Now, obviously, when you're in a heightened state and you're very, you know, upset because your animal is, you know, really, really sick, I just say to them, trust your gut. What do you think in that moment? What do you think they would want? What do you think they would need? And the animals will send messages to them. And whether the person realizes they're receiving it, they'll just get a knowing or a thought. So it's really trusting your gut at those times. And in actual fact, that's one thing I say to people when they have the what I call the grief guilt after euthanasia, say they haven't worked with me and they're still carrying that pain. And I say to them, well, look, now this is weeks, months later, you're ruminating it over in your mind. But when you're in that pinnacle point where you had to make that decision, any kind of decision it was around their end of life, all you ever want is for the best of them. You don't want them to suffer. You don't want anything bad to happen to them. You just want to make the right choice. So whatever choice you made in that moment is the right choice for you and them. You know, the animals don't hold anything against us. So I hope that answers your question, Carter.
Definitely.
I think that there is, because we're so emotional and scared that they're in pain or suffering, that it's really hard to tap into that, you know, space or that feeling or whatever. But if you can, I feel like we all have this ability, and you really, again, trust your gut. If you're looking at your animal and they're telling you something and you think you know what it is, you're probably right. And you should just go with that feeling.
Oh, totally.
I've tried to like really open up a lot about that and be more in tuned. What I want to ask you is, how do you tune out all the other stuff that's communicating with you? Like literally, how do you not have all the animals communicating with you or whatever? Like, how do you go, this is this animal? Because that's literally what I'm dealing with, is I don't know how.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to be more in touch with it, but I'm so sensitive that I don't know how. I can hear it all, or I'm feeling it all.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So I'm like, well, how do I just focus on that and turn the other stuff off?
Yeah. So the way I've learned to do it over the years is when I'm working with an animal and I'm consciously communicating with them and I have their photo or I'm with them, I just almost like create this little cocoon around us. So if I'm in a yard, a horse yard, and there's like 20 other horses and I'm trying to chat to this one here, you know, and there's so much distractions going on. Like, I just imagine we're just in this little envelope, this cocoon. And I had to really consciously do that at the start. And just, especially if I was in a racing yard, okay, where the horses have so much going on. And I just, it was literally a training I had to do for myself. I said, we're now in this bubble and it is just us. And the other thing that I would help myself stay focused is I would always have a little jotter and a pen. So as the animal's communicating with me, I'm writing down what I can hear or what I'm picking up. So it's almost like, again, it just keeps me
super focused,
right? And I had to train that into myself. And then after years later of doing that, now it's organic. Like, I switch it off. Like, when I'm out finished work and I'm out wandering around out the horses here, I'm not listening to them at all, unless they come up and they kick the gate and I'm like, okay, I switch it back on again because I'm not working. I live here. I need my weekends off, my evenings off. But if they need me, I'm there.
So now you need a 2.0 to train, once you get it and you tap into it, how the hell to turn it off when you don't want.
That's
when
it.
You're like, no, not now. Not now. I can't help.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. So you absolutely recommend doing it at home. And is like that an option for everybody? Can we all find somebody to do this at home? Or you're saying that if you can't, this is something that you can help them with flower essences to do themselves at home?
All right. Yeah. So if they want the kind of if they want the animal to select the flower essences and work with end of life botanicals and things like that, I recommend you work with someone like me or a holistic vet who has training in that. You know, like if you're consciously want to do that with the animal. However, if you have a bit of time and you know that it's coming, but it's not imminent, then there's flower essence you can use to just, you know, ease yourself and ease the animal into it. But when it comes to the closer to the time, oh, I think it's good to have somebody who has at least told you and sent you them and told you what to do. For example, what I would do is I would often post botanicals out to my clients that are end of life, but we don't know when. And I've trained them so they have them and they know what to do if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, and then they can just take care of it themselves.
And that's literally how I feel. Like, I feel like I have my tinctures, you know, my mushroom and cannabis tinctures ready to go. So that, I mean, there's nothing worse than having a lot of animals and being in the middle of nowhere and somebody getting injured or hurt. Yeah. And that you just want to take away that pain and fear and anxiety. And I love that we have things that are all natural that we can give our pets that's not going to cause them any harm and get rid of all of that so that we can then figure out what the heck to do. My advice is always give it to them, give it to yourself, and calm down and figure out what to do next.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about some of your favorite herbs that you use, and what are the ones that you keep going back to in these situations?
Oh, in these situations, frankincense. I love frankincense because,
me too.
Yeah, it's an amazing one because it not only readies the soul to leave, but also actual what another way we use it in terms of, we use it as a diluted down essential oil. Okay. So if you've got an animal that's kind of end of life stage and you're not quite sure, you're like, is it now? Is it not? If you offer them frankincense and they turn their nose away, that's them saying, I'm not ready. I've still got work to do. But if you offer them frankincense and they go, you watch, it could be getting close, you know, so that's a way. And I would actually say it to the animal. I say, look, I'm going to offer you this frankincense. And if you smell it, it's going to show me that you're ready. If you refuse it, it's going to show me that you're not. And then you offer it. Amazing.
That is amazing. I love frankincense. It's my favorite. Well, I guess we'll make our ease, our extra strength ease maybe can become our support end of life tincture, since it does have frankincense in it. I love it with hemp, of course.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't ask you is, like, how the hell did you get into this? Like, when did, like, how the heck do you go? Like, right now, a part of me wants to be an animal communicator and go down that realm and learn more about it. I don't really have time, but what made you, when's the first time that you were in, went, wait, who's talking to me here? What's going on? Or like that you had this gift and knew this is what you wanted to do.
It's a wild story. Are you ready for it?
I am.
Yeah. I was living in the Bolivian rainforest
awesome.
I was working with a jungle cat, Millie. She's an ocelot. And she was in a rehabilitation center. So I would walk her in the jungle all day long. She was kind of semi-wild because she was hand-reared, but they weren't actually able to properly release her. So she was in limbo. And at nighttime, she'd go back into her cage, but then during the day, we'd walk again. And because this was a wildlife sanctuary, there was a lot of different animals around that had issues and had been abused and things like that. And the monkeys in particular were a little bit tricky because sometimes they could bite people if they reminded them of a person that abused them in the past. So I wasn't a real fan of the monkeys. I was more of a cat person. They just kind of freaked me out a little bit, I'll be honest. And I was walking with Millie one day and we were far from where her little home was. And she was always free on her lead. I just let go and she'd just go off. And we were walking one day and a troop of monkeys started to come across the canopy, about 20 monkeys. And I was just looking at them going, oh, here's my friends now, here they are. And I was sitting there with Millie and she was at liberty. And I was like, okay, so let's just wait, Millie, because they're actually in between us and where we need to go. So we'll just wait till they pass. And monkeys, they're just doing their thing. And then they just kept getting closer and closer and closer and closer. And I just realized, I just went, oh my God, because these were some of the rehabilitated monkeys. So in a moment, I just looked at Millie and I just thought, run. And in the exact same moment, we ran. Now, she could have run at any time because she was free. We literally turned and sprinted off in the same direction. Then by the time I caught up with her, we were just like, oh my God. And I was just like, oh my God. And so I feel like the animal nation literally squeezed it out of me by that experience. That was the first time.
That is amazing. I remember as a child, literally answering, speaking, and then going, oh my God, I think I'm talking to my animals and they're talking to me. And then as like, I'm literally like 8 or 9 doing experiments. And I had a bunny, Snowball, and that bunny did everything I told him with my mind or whatever. Like I would just put him on the ground and go, okay, Snowball, let's go this way. And I would just start walking and he'd follow me. And then I'm like, okay, now I'm going to run with me. And then he'd run. And then I would just go further and further and run further, walk further, make him stay, tell him to come, whatever. And all in my mind, and he would do it.
I love that.
I spent most of my time outside with, I lived and I grew up in Miami on a canal with, you know, ducks and bunnies, and I wasn't allowed to have pets inside. So I was outside with all of my animals all the time. But I remember going, oh my gosh, I'm communicating with Snowball.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, if I could just like tap back into that or whatever, because it was so natural and I wasn't feeling like I was getting everything. So there is a part of me, I totally believe in it. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, communicating with them after they're gone. Because Odie's the first person, like, because I had such a hard time getting over it, who literally was like, I'm doing great. Everything's good. Yeah. And I even remember being like, if this is Odie talking to me, then do this. And freaking did it. And I just was like blown away. Freaking cried the whole day about it. It was such a beautiful experience.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit. Do you work with pet parents with that once they're gone?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Like, I call them in spirit readings, and I used to do them more often than I do them now. But what I learned over the years of doing them is I feel that they're very powerful. It really animals can communicate with us from the other side. I think it's no different to when they're communicating us when they're here with us in their earth bodies. But I just kind of like to feel that, let the animal's soul settle. All right. So sometimes people will ask me to do a communication with their animal that's just passed, like a few days ago. And I don't know, I just feel this, other people have different ways of doing it, but I like to say, look, let things settle for a bit, give it about 3 months and then come back to me. Yeah. And we can have a conversation about it then and see what comes. And you know what, the really interesting thing about these types of readings is they're the one reading that I get the least feedback from. Okay. It's amazing. So you do an in-spirit reading and people just, you never hear from them again. And the in-spirit readings, they're usually, I call them, it's like they're Yoda, okay, because they're in their spirit form. So they're very wise and they would give a lot of guidance and life support, life ideas and things like that for their person. And I was actually doing a reading recently for a friend of mine for her horse that passed away. And she's another practitioner. She's Chinese medicine herself, and she communicates totally all the time. But she just wanted me to be a neutral voice. And I said to her, look, no one really gives me much feedback. I said, would you give me feedback for this kind of reading? She goes, of course I will. And she said, you got the horse spot on, the tonality, awesome. Everything. Yeah. And I was just like, so those kind of, that kind of communication, I just think it's very personal for people. It's very possible. And again, allow it to be. People say, oh, I think they were communicating with me. I saw feathers. I saw a rainbow. I thought I saw them out of the corner of my eye. Of course you did. They're always here and they're always with us, you know?
Awesome. Thanks, Lisa.
Yeah. Oh.
Whew, thank you so much for coming on today and talking about this. I don't know why that hit me hard, but thank you. I know a lot of people will enjoy hearing this. And I'm going to need you to close, Carter, because I can't even talk right now. But I think it's really important what you do. And thank you so much for being here for us.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Well, I think you said it perfectly, Angela. Thanks for coming on, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
For listening to today's episode, please make sure to leave us a review wherever you're listening from. This is the best way to help pet parents like you find these episodes and get access to all our content. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Your Natural Dog and at AngelaArtolino.com.
Introducing MycoDog, an award-winning line of medicinal mushroom extracts combined with adaptogens like ashwagandha, astragalus root, and Bacopa monnieri, made specifically for your pets. When it comes to mushrooms, sourcing really matters. Unlike other products on the market that are grown in China or elsewhere, the mushrooms in MycoDog tinctures are grown here in the United States to the highest quality standards. MycoDog offers three formulas designed to support senior dogs, as well as those suffering from dementia and canine cognitive disorder, breathing and respiratory issues, or autoimmune diseases and cancer. Use coupon code YNDPODCAST at MycoDog.com for 10% off these fantastic fungi.